This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
Charlie Jacobs is a policy analyst in the Indigenous Affairs team at the Centre for Independent Studies, but we're actually talking today about Brexit, about the Scottish independence referendum, and Charlie is also actually a statistician with Fox Sports, and he's an extras actor. So,
wow,
he's a pretty busy guy. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Now, first off, Brexit. March 2019 is when the UK has to leave the EU. The negotiations are still continuing. We've seen an English election where Theresa May kicked a couple of own goals. We've had two senior British cabinet ministers in Australia recently, the Defence Minister and the Foreign Secretary, Boris. But this issue of what's going to happen with Brexit, but what's going to happen to Scotland, and I'm also interested with Ireland. What is going to happen there? So this is an issue that you've been doing a bit of a deep dive on. So tell us where you think it's going to end up.
Yes, I'll start with Ireland first. The tricky situation with Ireland is that the peace process in Northern Ireland is very finely balanced, and it's based on a deal signed in 1998 that requires an open border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. Now, if Brexit happens, the UK will share a land border with the Republic of Ireland, and that could require a lot of changes to that border in terms of customs checks and perhaps what you would call a hard border, which may throw into doubt the agreement of 1998, which requires a free movement of people between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And that border could act as a political tool for Irish separatists who may use that as a symbol of the militarisation of Northern Ireland again, and use that as a political tool. For Scotland, sorry, go on, Michael.
Sorry, Joan just had a question about Ireland.
And on that, could you give us some of your perspective on the coalition of the willing, to use a phrase, that Theresa May has had to rely on, given what could only be described as a pretty disastrous election result, the Northern, the Irish contingent of that. What impact do you see on the peace process there as well?
Look, that puts a lot of pressure on the peace process because it suggests that the British government is in bed perhaps with the Democratic Unionist Party, the party they signed the deal with, and Sinn Féin, who is the main Irish Republican Party, are arguing that this totally undermines the concept of the Good Friday Agreement, where the British government is required to have little intervention into the party politics of Northern Ireland. So that deal has been controversial. There's been discussions of legal action, but it's still very much in the balance. And at the moment, the Northern Irish Parliament is actually not functioning due to a breakdown between the two parties in their power-sharing deal.
So how can, if the peace agreement requires a free border, the EU, if when Britain exits, so if one part of Ireland is in the EU and another part's not, then goods and people will be, unless there is a hard border, people will be able to pass freely, won't they? So how's that going to, the EU, I mean, that sort of, it brings up all sorts of questions of, okay, if that happens, is there going to be coming from one part of Ireland to the UK, we have to go through customs, or if you come from the other part, will you not? I mean, it seems to me like a bit of a bit of a, I was going to say something inappropriate then, but it
sure
just seems to me,
I don't,
yeah, I don't know how this is possibly going to work. I know we'll get on to Scotland in a sec, but how is this possibly going to work?
From an immigration perspective, I don't see it being hugely different to what occurs now, where with Britain being out of the Schengen zone, when you enter the Republic of Ireland, you still have to go through the full immigration checks that you would have to when you enter Britain. So that would mean that when you cross the border, they've already got all your information and know that you've entered the Republic of Ireland. So I don't see the immigration side of things being an issue. It's probably more from an economic perspective with trade tariffs and the impact on the local economies in those areas of not being able to freely travel over the border with goods.
Okay, now Scotland, of course, has it has land borders with the UK. The Scottish independence referendum was it was 2014, wasn't it? Now,
Yeah, that's correct.
Is there a desire for another one, or what's happening there? Because you know, it seems to me it seems to to and fro a bit.
Very much so. The SNP, the Scottish National Party, used independence as a key cornerstone of their general election campaign in June, and a lot of people feel that that actually worked against them. They lost a third of their seats in Westminster, so they went from holding 56 of 59 Scottish seats to going down to holding 35. So they still hold a majority, but they lost a lot of seats, and Nicola Sturgeon, the leader of the SNP, acknowledged that perhaps she'd pushed independence too hard. And given that there's a lot of turmoil going on with Brexit, independence may not be on people's minds so much.
Do you think... I mean, some people have said that if Scotland effectively... If Scotland wanted, you know, to stay in the EU, and I mean, I know that's not as easy as it sounds, but if Scotland left the UK in terms of laws... that again is going to create a situation for Brexit, because you'd have part of the country that's in the EU and the free trade and free movement that that involves, but a country that's within another country effectively.
Yeah, I would say that being an overly complicated relationship, and there's not really much of a precedent for that. Perhaps the Vatican City is one example of a country that's surrounded by an EU nation but is not actually in the EU, but given the size of the Vatican, it's not quite replicable with Scotland. So I don't see that being an easy relationship. I don't think it would be possible for Scotland to be in the EU and the UK that has left the European Union. It's just not feasible.
You're familiar with that wonderful episode of Yes Minister, where some of the Commonwealth countries basically say to Jim Hacker, you know, if you keep this up, we're going to have to ask England to leave the Commonwealth. You know, which, of course, the palace wouldn't like. But it seems to me that Theresa May, you know, is in coalition with the Democratic Unionists, you know, which is a confidence and budget support, basically. There are big policy differences. As they get closer and closer... to Brexit, I see there's going to be some serious problems both with the peace process in Ireland but with Scotland. You know, we've seen Scottish independence wax and wane over the last couple of years, but at the end of the day, there's a huge groundswell of support in Scotland for independence. But as you say, you don't think they couldn't actually be part of the EU very easily.
No, I think as an independent nation, as well as part of the UK, it would be difficult to be in the EU. In terms of to enter the EU, Scotland would have to receive the endorsement of all EU members.
Yeah.
And that poses a big problem with Spain in particular, who are very wary of promoting independence-seeking nations due to their own separatist struggles in Catalonia and the
Basque
Country.
And the small matter of Gibraltar as well.
Yeah, and a very tricky issue of Gibraltar there, which is still being sorted out. So I don't see it being easy for Scotland to get back into the EU, and that definitely works against the independence cause, because that is one of the key arguments of the SNP, is that Scotland will be a stronger nation within the EU.
So, I mean, interestingly, Theresa May had the big gamble. Initially, it was expected she'd absolutely smash it and there'd be, you know, massive majorities. Corbyn ran an exceptionally good campaign.
Which actually wasn't based on not Brexiting.
No, oh, he went hearts and minds and
Brexit
equality.
Light. Brexit light.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, he played a certainly a very strong values campaign. She appeared to me anyway to sort of wilt on a daily basis rather than rise, and clearly that was reflected in the result. The Britain's now facing, you know, one of the greatest challenges it's had in living memory in managing all of these things, including the Ireland issue, the Scotland issue, Brexit. How long do you think she's got? How's she going over there? Are people, you know, looking for alternatives?
I think the swell support for Jeremy Corbyn has been humongous, and he's actually going up to Scotland in August to try and drum up support there and get some Corbyn fever going up there. But I think May will last a bit longer than we think. She is under a lot of pressure, but it's going to take a lot to dethrone a Prime Minister only months after being elected, and the Conservative Party can't deal with that sort of instability, in my opinion.
I think one of the challenges here, Charlie, is that, you know, English politics, and we've actually only got a couple of minutes left, but British politics is very different to Australia. But do you think if a Brexit referendum was held now, do you think the result would be any different?
Yes, I think people would have had time to discuss the election result and the impact that might have had. People are definitely wary of the loss of franchise Britain might have outside the European Union, and I think people would have had more time to assess where Britain sat in the union and how important the European Union was to Britain in terms of trade and immigration. I would see it being very close again, but I could see it just being the other way, you know, 49 to 51 rather.
Now, if you were living in Britain and you had the right to vote, can I ask you, would you have voted for Brexit?
What's a very good question.
Look, Mac, I'm very undecided on that one. I hate to sit on the fence, but I can see both sides of the story there, and I can see Britain being stronger from Brexit in terms of establishing greater global relationships, for example, with Australia. But I can also see it being very challenging and isolating for Britain to be up there by themselves in Europe and having a fight at the moment against an EU that seems a little bit hostile towards them in terms of how the Brexit deal is going to play out.
Do you see any flow-on effects about Britain's decision in other countries in the EU?
I think it's definitely motivated discussions. It definitely played a role in the French elections with the far right there using Britain's exit from the EU as a key sort of discussion point in their election campaign, and they didn't win that election, but it definitely got the discussion going in France. And similarly, discussions are happening across Europe, I think, about how the EU works and how countries sit in the EU and what their relationship should be with it.
Look, we're just about out of time, Charlie. What I want to say is thank you so much for your time. We're going to touch base with you every 3 months or so to give us an update on how it's going, and if, you know, the map as it's laid out now, how it changes, what's influencing it, because it does have an impact on Australia. You know, there's talk of Australia having a free trade agreement with the EU by the end of 2019. That means that at least, well, from March 2019, Britain won't be in the EU, so we're going to have trade agreements with Britain. But it makes it very interesting in terms of commerce in Australia, that is pretty strongly wedded to the EU, and all of a sudden Britain's going to be on the outer. They're going to be on a cross-channel ferry that doesn't know where it's going.
Mm. Well, it also raises this Section 44 things with all of the passports and who's held dual citizenships of what, and quite the fun times ahead.
Yeah. So, Charlie, thanks. Well, no, please, go on.
Well, thank you very much, Mac and Jane.
Look, it's been a pleasure. I know Saturdays are busy for everyone. As I said, we'll touch base with you again in probably about 3 months' time and get an update. Thank you very much.
No worries. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.